Hey, it's Mike Halford from the Halford and Brough podcast. One, thanks for downloading. Two, thanks for listening. Three, why not leave a review while you listen to the podcast? And now, back to the show. 8:05 on a Tuesday. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Hour three of the program now underway. This hour is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. That's not the only company that's presenting hour three of the Halford and Brough experience. This hour of Halford and Brough is also brought to you by Campbell and Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell and Pound. Visit campbell-pound.com today. Do we have Drancer on the line? Greg's chuckling away there. Laddie laughing away. Real quick, since we don't have news updates, sports news updates anymore, I'll pass along two quick ones of note. The Vezina finalists are in. Zero surprise here. Shesterkin, Saros, Markey, Jacob Markstrom with a Vezina finalist nod. So that's in the books. Also, across the pond, huge news from the world of footy. The Erling Haaland to Man City transfer is complete. It's nice to see the small budget, financially constrained clubs able to get in on the big fish. It's great to see.
How many pounds was the transfer fee?
$63 million, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
Which is actually, I know this is hard to believe, but that's a bargain.
Yeah, I thought it was gonna be bigger.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm disappointed.
Yeah, the release clause from Dortmund had the $60 million. So it ended up being $63 million at the end of the day. So, and I believe he is on 350,000 euro a week wage. The only guy on City that makes more is Kevin De Bruyne. So it's good that there's such financial constraint in the Premier League and that City, despite all of their financial hardships, is able to cobble together the money to get the most prized young striker in the world. That's great. Let's go to the phone lines now. We are joined from...
You are lashing out because Leeds are probably going to get relegated.
It's not a great time for me personally.
Okay. That's fine.
Yeah. Let's go to the phone lines now. We are joined from the Athletic Vancouver and the Canucks Hour right here on Sportsnet 650. Thomas Drance on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, Drancer?
Oh, excited for Man City, I'll tell you that much. They need a striker to keep up with Rodrigo, so this is a big transfer for them.
I don't want to talk about it, quite honestly. I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
It's going to be fun to watch, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a super team now, right? It's basically playing FIFA in real time, but whatever.
I'm just hopeful that Jack Grealish now won't have his entire career defined by those two misses late at the Bernabeu.
Yes. Okay, I don't want to talk about this. You know what? I don't want to do this.
Really, Tom, stop.
Yeah, Tom, please stop. Let's talk about your Vancouver Canucks. You know what? We went through the exercise the other day of going through some of the individual grades that you and Harm laid out in the end-of-year report card, and we kind of made a note. This was me anyway. It was very circular logic here, but it makes sense. There were two other teams that one is now out of the playoffs, the Nashville Predators. One is on the verge of being out of the playoffs, the New York Rangers, and when we were reading your guys' grades, we're like, wow, there were a lot of good individual performances in Vancouver this year. And a lot of those guys got high grades. And then we looked at the Rangers and we're like, well, if you were to do the same exercise for them, Kreider, Shesterkin, Fox, Zibanejad would all probably get fairly high grades for the great individual performances they had. And then in Nashville, you would say Forsberg, Duchesne both had 40 goals, Yossi, pretty obvious, Saros. I think there's a commonality here that you can have a lot of good individual performances and some good individual players, yet the gulf between being a real legit Stanley Cup contender and just kind of being a playoff team is still pretty large despite those individual performances.
Being a team capable of doing anything when you get there. I mean, Nashville and the New York Rangers are the teams that profile most closely to what the Vancouver Canucks could have been if they'd made the playoffs, right? I mean, even under Bruce Boudreaux, right? Those are the teams that got Vezina nominee caliber goaltending, now official, right? And those are the teams that didn't really control play. They punched above their weight in terms of their performance over the course of this season, in large part due to, you know, individual performances and great goaltending, as opposed to the type of structured game that honestly you need. And I think if you look at the NHL last night, you saw a pretty good template for what you need to be able to do when the chips are down at the end of the year in the playoffs to turn it up and to effectively luck proof yourself, right? Like, look at that Florida Panthers game, right? There were the shots were 24-11 when Kuznetsov took the lead with the 12th Washington Capitals shot, right? I mean, the Panthers then continue to just crush them. By the end of the game, it's a 65% control of expected goals, and they needed every moment of control that they had because things go badly in the playoffs. You can be a 122-point team and still be facing, you know, this 103-point Washington Capitals team that's big and workmanlike and defensively sound and is playing a 1-3-1 in the neutral zone the moment they take a lead on you. And all of a sudden, you can't do your five-man breakout that the Panthers like to – like, they're completely interfering with how the Panthers want to play the game. And nonetheless, the Panthers were able to turn up, find that extra gear, and luck-proof the result. They just controlled too much of the play to be unlucky. You look at Calgary and what they did to Dallas last night, same thing. Back up against the wall, right? They've only scored – what? They've scored – a couple of goals in the entire series going into last night, and they just absolutely boot stomped the Dallas Stars, right? They just completely controlled that game. There was no other possible outcome with the way that they generated more than the Stars. As good as Jake Oettinger was, and Jake Oettinger had, you know, 45 heroic moments on top of the 180 heroic moments that he's already played in this season, or in this series, The Flames beat down the door. They were inevitable because of the way they controlled play. And then you've got this Pittsburgh-New York Rangers series where, again, like the New York Rangers are what the Canucks at their best down the stretch were like a dime store version of, right? Great special teams, great individual performances, excellent goaltending, right? Win a ton of one-goal games. Have a veteran coach, right, who likes to, you know, a player's coach, laissez-faire, laid-back guy, right? I mean, legitimately, the New York Rangers and the Vancouver Canucks are sort of the East-West version of one another. And the New York Rangers got crushed in a way that was almost historically lopsided last night. Like, there's a material difference between what happened to New York yesterday, regardless of what the score indicates, and what happened to Florida when they lost 7-1 to the Washington Capitals or the Toronto Maple Leafs when they lost 7-3 to the Tampa Bay Lightning. You know, I think Money Puck at one point had the expected goal market at 83%. It was like the highest number it had been in the playoffs since 07, since the stats started being tracked. It's like the Pittsburgh Penguins completely outclassed the team with the Vezina nominee. And in fact, the Vezina winner, Igor Shesterkin, is going to win the Vezina. And they completely outclassed them with Louis Domingue in net to the point where they had absolutely no chance. Well, that's the power of control. That's the power of controlling the game at this time of year. That's what the Canucks need to get to, right? Like, if you looked at what this team could have been, say Horvat doesn't get hurt, say Demko doesn't get hurt, say they sneak in, they would have been, you know, a cut-rate version of the Nashville Predators or the New York Rangers. Those were their closest comparables among playoff teams, which just sort of speaks to the distance this team still has to travel to get to the point where they're playing not meaningful hockey in the spring as if that's a goal worth aiming for, but actual meaningful hockey in May, right? That you can't be a team like those, a team like that, a team that has one trick and it's in net, and win when it matters, period. We're seeing it play out in real time.
Drance, what is the best analytic to describe a team's quality or a team's chances? Is there one? Like, a lot of people will go to expected goals for at 5-on-5. But
goals for?
Just goals for, period?
No. Is that what you're saying?
No, expected goals for percentage.
Sure. Yeah,
I would say is the percentage of goals scored. But I think that would, like, for example, in 2010-11, the Canucks were mediocre in that stat, but they just had such good special teams that they were one of the best teams in the NHL and nearly won the Stanley
mediocre.
Cup.
They weren't mediocre.
Well, there, if you look at 2010-11, natural stat trick, 5-on-5, expected goals for percentage. was 14th in the NHL at 50.16. So that they really weren't that great.
Yeah, they were better. They were better by like CF percentage, I suppose, right? Which is what we paid attention to at the time, right? So yeah, I mean that's interesting. We might have been a little more skeptical of that team if we'd been paying closer attention to it at the time. But of course,
yeah,
you know,
maybe. But I think watching that team, like that was a team that dictated the play and dictated the strategy that they wanted, and I think that's like, I don't know if controlling the play and dictating the play are different, but I like to say dictating the play, because that means like you have a strategy and you're confident in that strategy and you're not constantly reacting. I felt like the Canucks this season, although there were some really impressive games down the stretch. I think about that 6-2 win over Dallas. Like that was a game where the Canucks just controlled the game and they were the better game.
Absolutely.
A lot of the time they were reacting because they were trailing. Right. So they would look good, but in a lot of cases it was just score effects. Like the other team was like, okay, we got a 2-goal lead. We're not going to attack as much, whether that was intentional or just psychological. It just happens in hockey. So I don't know. I mean, my original question, I'm rambling here, but my original question was like, do you have a specific number that you look at? If you go to Natural Stat Trick and you're trying to do power rankings for the NHL, what will you look at?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I'm going to look at is expected goals percentage, 5-on-5. And if you look through it, you know, I think every team in the top 10 is a playoff team except Vegas. And it basically took Vegas like a black swan event over the last 2 months of the year to miss, right? You know, you sort of look through that number, and I mean, there's a very good chance if Minnesota beats St. Louis, every team that advances will be in the top 12, right? I believe I did that look-see yesterday. So St. Louis is sort of the one outlier team that sort of lags in that number that I still think really highly of. I think they do some stuff in terms of pounding the slot with scoring chances and down low passes into the slot that I think the public numbers are kind of missing. Mm-hmm. Some of what St. Louis does well. So I think XG kind of undervalues them, which goes to show you that, you know, for example, the NHL leader in expected goals is Boston. And I don't think Boston has the same gear that Carolina does. So it's not a perfect number. It's not a number that I look at without context.
Yeah.
Right?
LA's higher than Edmonton. That's another one that might surprise some people.
Yeah, totally. Although I sort of believe that one, because I think that LA controls play really well, particularly with their transition game. Like, they're just so clean.
Which Jim Rutherford actually mentioned. He talked about how well the LA Kings break the puck out.
Yeah, it's fun to watch. And it's been a big reason why I was high on, I mean, I was high on them based off of what I saw as like the amount of chips that they had sort of like allocated to areas where they could get lucky. And they kind of didn't, at least in terms of their forwards, right? It's not like Alex Turcotte popped this year, right? Other than Kylev, their young shooter, they didn't really have like a Byfield breakout or a Vilardi breakout. Like those things didn't go their way, but you know, they got a ton of breakout performances on the back end, and their transition game was so good that, you know, it worked for them. They punched above their weight nonetheless. And it was within 10 days into the season, watching them play, I was like, oh my goodness, this team's a problem. They're so crisp in terms of their puck movement. Like, I thought, it's a different game than Vancouver was capable of playing, even though their breakouts were, you know, totally different before they sort of stopped trying to do them, right? Before they went pure punt and hunt under Bruce Boudreau. So in terms of expected goals, though, yeah, I look at that as just sort of, I look at that in combination with, of course, on-ice shooting and on-ice save percentage to try and determine what I sort of think of as like a team's top gear, right? Like, you know, I almost view it as like, what are you pitching, right? Like, what's the radar gun read on your game? And then from there, you use special teams and you use, like, you know, the old school vibe check stuff, right? So like, well, you know, this hasn't worked, but they've had some injuries, so I think they're undervalued here, or, you know, stylist. I mean, you use some of your own stuff to sort of determine what you think. But yeah, expected goals gives you kind of an idea of their like of the gear that they can hit. But obviously other things matter, including goaltending quality and special teams. And those things sometimes matter a ton to the point where I'll pick against the expected goals in terms of my own predictions. But, you know, that to me is sort of the key thing. You do need to be able to control games, and yeah. You need to be able to do it consistently, because eventually you get to the playoffs and you're facing a good team and things start going against you. And if you don't have the ability to control the game, you don't have a plan B, right? You are lost when Louis Domingo's out, gets into the net, when Casey DeSmith and Tristan Jarry get hurt, right? When the Washington Capitals are stymieing you in the neutral zone, like can you find a plan B? And if you can't control play, you do not have one.
Right.
And that's sort of what the Predators are. That's why they're gone. You know, that's a perfect example. They got onto their third string goalie. Well, you know, they got trounced, right? Thoroughly trounced, skated off the ice by the Colorado Avalanche in 7 days, just as we were all saying would happen, right? I mean, I picked that in the sweep. It was one of the least surprising sweeps we've ever seen. You go look at the New York Rangers and the Pittsburgh Penguins, and you'll see the exact opposite thing, right? The Pittsburgh Penguins lose their two goalies, and instead of being Nashville, right, they're Pittsburgh. Yeah. They control play, and they're going to beat the Rangers. And so, you know, it just sort of speaks to, again, what really matters at this time of year, and it's the ability to create an environment where you're more likely to score the next goal than your opponent. And if you can do that durably, you're going to win.
Drancer, what do you make of the reports that the Canucks are exploring trade options for Oliver Ekman-Larsson?
I think there's a certain thing where if you go and sort of look at the Canucks situation or think about the Canucks situation, right? We're so immersed in the conversations around this team and this market, right? That like when they traded for Oliver Ekman-Larsson, there was a certain reaction, right? And then it's like, well, you got to give him a chance, right? You got to give him a chance in this market. And then he played pretty well. He played really well, especially for the first 4 or 5 months, but overall this season, right? You'd say that he exceeded most expectations. I think all reasonable expectations, frankly, considering his form in 2021, he bounced back and then some this year. So if you've been talking about this trade since it happened 8 months ago, and realistically, even for 8 months before that, when it first sort of surfaced, you'd sort of come in and be like, well, that trade worked out in terms of Ekman-Larsson's performance. You know, the contract's still a bit big, but my goodness, he was a classy top four defenseman for this team, right? If you're coming in the way that new management is and you're seeing this team with fresh eyes, right? I mean, isn't that the contract you'd try and move? Like, you know, if you're trying to create flexibility, you're finding that you have the, you know, a top five most expensive blue line in hockey. Was second for much of the year prior to the Hamonic deal, right? You know, and you'd say, okay, well, we're not very good on defense, and we have one of the most expensive blue lines in hockey. You know, if we could move one of those big blue line contracts, that would help. That would help create opportunities and avenues for us to improve that blue line elsewhere and down the line. You know, same thing I think goes for your glut of top six wingers who are paid, you know, $5 million plus, and Garland, Miller, Besser, who sort of dominated the rumor mill in the lead up to the trade deadline, right? If you're seeing this problem and trying to solve it with a fresh set of eyes, reallocating money from your top six forwards elsewhere on the lineup to try and improve your blue line and your depth makes some sense. So, you know, to me, it's not a shock, right? It's something that, you know, you'd have to consider if cap space and getting younger and creating avenues to improve are a priority for your organization. And if you're seeing it with a fresh set of eyes, you know, it's just a sensible thing to do. Now, Ekman-Larsson's deal runs so long, right? And he's going to be 35 when it expires. He's a good player, but my goodness. And then he's got the full no movement clause too. You know, that's a complicated one to execute. Would I expect to see that happen this summer? I wouldn't. I think there's just too much that has to fall your way in order to execute that deal.
Drancer, great stuff today, bud. Thanks a lot for doing this. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of the playoffs this week. Have a good show today. We'll do this again next Tuesday.
Thank you, boys. Bye.
Thank you. That's Thomas Drancer from The Athletic Vancouver and the Canucks Hour here on Sportsnet 650.
Sorry to you and all the listeners that I nerded out with Trance on.
You do owe all of us an apology.
Sorry about that. Sorry. Yeah.
Greg and I locked eyes, and then we both realized that they were both glazed over.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough. It's
okay. Can you lock eyes when they're both glazed over?
How did it work? It was more like a glue almost between the two of us.
I actually have a little button that zaps
right.
Halford when he starts to drift off like that. Yeah.
We're talking about expected goals again.
Halford has been present for maybe 10 minutes of the show because there was also those few minutes with Brunt, and then I had my CFL rant where Halford's just kind of looking around the studio.
A few minutes. It felt longer.
And, of course, the start of the show in which you were still snoozing.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
It's actually been a really...
You've worked for like 15 minutes
It's
today.
Been a really zen-like morning for me, I'm not going to lie. Despite the fact that it started with a rather jarring wake-up, everything's pretty irie, right, in my world right now. It's pretty good.
What we learned is coming up. Only half an hour left in the show. Halford's going
to
be like,
bed.
I'm totally back to bed already.
I've been awake for 2.5 hours. I don't even really need to do anything for the rest of the day. This is great.
Text in your What We Learns to the Dunbar Lumber text line. It can be about Toronto Maple Leafs, big game. It can be about Oliver Ekman-Larsson. It can be CFL related. Hey, did you know, here's an early one, and we haven't even talked about it today, the draft lottery. The NHL's draft lottery is today, and I guess we're not really talking about it that much because the Canucks have no chance of picking first overall.
They're supposed to pick 15th. They're going to pick 15th. That's all you need to know. They can move up to 5, and I think it's a 0.3% chance that it can happen. So don't get excited about it. Don't start thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Just acknowledge that you're going to be picking in the mid-teens, 15 probably,
right,
and move on from there.
Okay.
Did I kill any sort of buzz that we had around the draft lottery right
well,
there?
Well, I think it's just reality, right?
My Buzz Killington?
Do you remember how big a deal the draft lottery was when the Canucks were in the race, especially that year where they were in the race for Rasmus Dahlin?
And I hosted a show at the Pint with Sakaris and Lawrence Gilman. That's how big it was. And I'm like, wait, are we doing this for the draft? And they're like, no, the draft lottery. I'm like, the thing the Vancouver Canucks never win. I'm like, yeah, that's right.
And we all had our lucky charms and everything.
Yeah, it was bad. It wasn't great. You left, and then I was left to fend.
What do you mean I left? I just wasn't part of the show?
You were upset, and then you left the Pint.
Oh, after they lost the draft lottery.
And then I stuck around to listen to Sakaris put together a rant about how Gary Bettman had gifted Carolina an increased draft chance. They moved up in the draft lottery.
Carolina?
Yeah, because it was a welcome to the NHL gift for Tom Dundon. I was like, check, please. I'll just pay for this now and get out of here. That was one of the memories I have of draft lotteries past. Thankfully, we don't have to do that anymore. It can be a brief mention before we go to break. We are going to go to break now. What We Learns are coming up next. Get them into the Dunbar Lumber text line at 650-650. What did you learn over the last 24 hours in sports? Let us know. We'll read it on the radio. It's your chance to be on the air. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Here we go. I feel like we could open our own lounge and just play this song on loop and then introduce various characters. And now the Halford and Bruff Dancers.
It's just Laddie and Dom.
They're not even dancing.
Nobody wants to see that.
And then the scene where we have to weigh you in between shows to make sure you're not getting all fat.
Dom just yo-yoing. I've tried the keto.
This is why
I hate it so much.
This is why you never hire a Slovak keto dancer.
Ever.
They're fluctuating up and down, left and right. One day he's at 215, another one he's at 165. He's all ribs.
The one guy always wears sweatpants. That's not very sexy.
Laddie loves this.
That's me. I'm the sweatpants guy.
He's dancing in sweats. Halford and Bruff of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour 3 of the program. Hour 3 is brought to you by Campbell and Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell and Pound. Visit Campbell-Pound.com today. I very briefly mentioned prior to going to break that the NHL draft lottery is tonight. And then I said, we're not going to spend a lot of time on this because the Canucks probably aren't going to move anywhere. They're probably going to pick 15th. And I wanted that to be the end of the conversation. But nobody listens to me. And everybody texted in. They had to get their 2 cents in to the Dunbar Lumber text line about all these tiny permutations and things that might happen. We're not going to do this. We've matured as a city, I feel, as a market. We're past this now. We had many dark years where the only thing we had to look forward to was the draft lottery. We're in a better position now, folks. Now we can look forward to trading our star player and firing the coach that had the most memorable run in recent memory. Better we're in a better place collectively.
Better teams, but still not good enough.
Exactly.
Do we revert next year in the Connor Bedard year?
No. We're out of it now. We got to leave. We leave loser talk for the losers like Arizona and Montreal. We can look down our noses at them right now. That's why I keep bringing up.
The Connor Bedard tankathon is going to be pretty compelling.
I feel like us and Nashville are kind of the same thing right now. We can be like.
It's not like.
You ask the fan base, like, what do you think of your team? And the reply is like.
It's not we're doing great. It's look how worse these other teams are doing.
We don't have to slum it in the lottery with the Coyotes. That's their thing.
Look at all the bad contracts the Sharks have. Yeah. We've only got like two or three now.
Look at all the bad contracts the Coyotes have. Half of them are the Canucks.
Yeah.
All right.
They just expired though, so.
It's like Columbus can have two picks this year. I don't care. That's not my problem.
How many players does Arizona actually have under contract for next season? I'm talking legitimate NHLers.
I'll tell you.
Is it like Clayton Keller?
He's under contract.
Not many. They signed Vemelka.
Vejmelka. It's a hard J.
Sorry.
I know. Sorry. Okay, under contract for next season.
They've got, I feel like they have three guys to long-term contracts.
Clayton Keller.
Yeah.
Nick Schmaltz,
right. I always forget about him.
The Schmaltzer. Andrew Ladd's technically under contract next year. Nick Ritchie.
Right.
Jack McBain. Get McBain.
Jack McBain. And then on the back end, they've got Chychrun. But they're probably going to trade him.
Gostis Bear.
Okay.
And they just re-signed my favorite defenseman, and he's going to represent Team Canada at the Worlds. Dyson Mayo is absolutely a real name and not something that was just made up.
BC's own.
Yes, BC's own Dyson Mayo. So he's got a three-year, a nice tidy piece of business there. $950K. Interesting. He signed a three-year deal. With an average annual value of $950K? That's interesting.
Got up your Dyson Mayo knowledge.
I don't care. You know what? I regret even bringing it up. Okay, let's go to what we learned here. Laddie, you said you had one.
Yeah, I got a quick one here. I'm going to read this tweet out that came out this morning. And you tell me if this sounds like it's a strong franchise with a good foundation. A first ever event coming to Lone Depot Park. Lone Depot Park.
L-O-A-N.
L-O-A-N.
Not it's this, the only depot.
No,
L-O-N-E.
It's a loan.
A depot company. For loans?
A depot for loans.
Okay.
We would like to announce the Miami Marlins Bored Ape NFT art display on Friday, June 3rd. They're having a Bored Ape NFT.
Bored, B-O-R-E-D?
Yeah, do you know what the Bored Apes are? No?
Yes.
It's a very popular NFT trend.
It's the monkey NFT.
Yes, the monkey NFT that you see around all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
They're putting them up on pillars around the Marlins Stadium.
For the purpose of what?
I guess advertising for the NFTs. Yeah. All those Bored Ape enthusiasts are invited to come out.
You know how you were talking about your eyes glazing over?
Yeah.
All I'm hearing is Bored Apes and NFT. I don't even know what the hell you're talking about.
Does that sound like a strong franchise to you guys? The franchise that Jeter just left?
You know what? Here's the thing. Everyone's getting in on this right now. So I understand that the Marlins are desperate.
But what even is this?
I don't know.
Like, well, what is Russell Wilson?
Russell Wilson had an NFT, but for sports drinks, if I'm not mistaken.
For sports drinks. Yeah. It's like, it's a sports drink, but with a whole group of NFTs. And like, what the hell are you talking about, Russ?
I thought the NFT was digital. Like, do you have to drink the drink? It didn't make any sense to me when he launched it. This is where we're at in a society now. Is you just take two things that are trending and jam them together. It's like a radio that you can work in the shower. It's like you can shower on the radio. Now it's like, it's Uber, but for cats. Like, that's the idea. That's where we're at. with inventing things now.
And by the way, wasn't Bitcoin supposed to be a hedge for inflation? And wasn't it supposed to be like, oh, if the world goes to hell, at least I've got my Bitcoin? Well, everything is being sold off right now, including Bitcoin. So what is the point of Bitcoin? Please, someone text in.
I don't know. I put all my money in Dogecoin.
Dogecoin. Dogecoin.
Oh, it's not Dogecoin?
Dogecoin.
I got to talk to my broker. Okay, Mukel, whatever that was.
Dom just texted, I don't want to talk about Bitcoin. He's rattled. Dom's retirement fund is crashing.
They put it up in Bored Apes.
B-O-R-E-D.
Yes. B-O-R-E-D.
Like chairman of the board, but that's B-O-A-R-D.
That's a different ape.
Okay. First of all, a very, very, very hurtful what we learned from Nick. What we learned, Halford and Bruff without Bruff is still a good show, but without Halford, woof. It was 10 minutes in the morning.
I didn't listen for that
where
reason.
Halford left me in the lurch.
I had a little snooze.
And it didn't go off the rails or anything.
It sounded good when I came in. You guys were talking about Kale McCarr.
Yeah.
There was a back and forth banter between you and Laddie. It sounded like terrestrial radio.
Could have been a show.
Yeah.
I think Laddie said four words because I was rolling.
You were
I was feeling it.
He woke up early. He's on fire. He was ready to go today.
You were lecturing. You were lecturing.
Wow, that's just so mean.
You shouldn't read the mean ones. Who's the, are you arguing with several different CFL enthusiasts/apologists, or is it just one? Because your CFL, I will say this, your CFL, your impassioned CFL conversation generated more user gen content than anything I've seen out of the CFL in the last year. So good on you. These people that don't understand that we're playing 4D chess, not checkers, don't understand that you've actually raised the profile of the Canadian Football League by dumping on the Canadian Football League. How is it?
Well, I don't think I made people want to go and buy tickets to the CFL, so I don't think it helped. But I'm just honest in my assessment of it. And someone will text in and be like, you guys are part of the problem. You don't talk about the CFL. I have to admit, there is a bit of a vicious cycle there. Because here's the thing. And I replied this. Like, what's your theory on why we don't talk about the CFL? And why fewer and fewer mainstream media outlets talk about the CFL? Is it a conspiracy where all the hosts have gotten together and said, we're going to take down the CFL together? Or is it the fact that we will respond in a lot of ways to what the listeners want to talk about? And the listeners do not want to talk about the CFL for the most part. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're probably sitting there at home, you might be a CFL diehard and be like, oh, I want to talk about the CFL. Yeah, but you're in the minority. I'm sorry to say, but you are. If we went out and asked casual sports fans or even hardcore sports fans, like name five Lions in this city, I think they'd have a tough problem. I think they'd have a tough time doing that.
Right. That's fair. You're not making me do it, right?
No, like I know you can't do it.
Dodge that bullet.
Well, ask people who the starting quarterback is for the BC Lions right now.
I know that one. It's Nathan Rourke.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great story in that he is Canadian. And the Lions should be
He's Canadian?
And the Lions should be leaning into that. And I hope Nathan Rourke has lots of success because that's what sports teams need. Unless you're just the Vancouver Canadians and you're like, we have a great experience and that's everything. Then you need marketable players. You need players to go out and cheer for. I can't tell you how exciting it was watching Doug Flutie. Like some of the games that he would have were just incredible. I don't see players like that in the CFL anymore.
CFL needs an NFT launch.
Maybe some. We got a lot of crypto texts coming into the Dunbar Lumber text message.
Buy low, sell high, apparently, is the way to go.
Yep. Ryan in Black Creek with a What We Learned. Hashtag WW What We Learned. I learned that Halford is probably investing in Batcoin instead of Bitcoin. That was a problem. I learned my lesson, though. And that's when I put all my money in Dogecoin.
The wrong one.
What we learned, unsigned, is the Angels having Ohtani and Mike Trout on the same team is a cheat code, but they haven't had any playoff success is a crime. Laddie, you're our baseball guy.
Talk about the Angels.
How can a baseball, like, how bad are they? Do the other guys know how to throw and hit? Like, are they just like...
It's a nuclear power plant team before the ringers.
This one guy's using a cricket bat.
Yeah.
What's going on?
They're having an okay year this year. They're off to a good start.
I was just actually looking at the record. 20-11 this year, so they're off to a really good start. But for years, it was... they were the team that would just throw money at the big free agent and expect that free agent
Albert
to
Pujols,
solve all their issues.
Right.
Yeah. So they didn't really have a good team surrounding these guys. And you're never going to win in a sport where there's nine players that all get equal... You know, they get their chance up at the plate. You can't just have one or two good hitters. It's not how baseball works.
Chet and Burnaby, what we learned, I've learned Toronto is going to try and lean on good goaltending and physical play tonight, a.k.a. Campbell and Pound. And that's a lesson.
Yeah!
And that's a lesson to all the advertisers or the potential advertisers. People are listening.
People are listening.
They're engaged with your brand.
You know, we are.
I hate myself for saying that, by the way.
What, brand engagement?
Brand engagement. The listeners are very much engaged.
You sound like you're about to sell me an NFT.
Yeah.
Or some dog.
It's the future.
Hashtag WWL.
Fiat currency.
Oh, we're still going.
My favorite lingo is activation. It's not an event when you go to an event or something. It's called an activation.
I like incentivize. That's mine. Mm-hmm. How are we going to incentivize this?
Some synergy would work.
Matt and Abby, hashtag WWO, what we learned. I learned that Dennis Shapovalov, a.k.a. Dennis Shapovalov, is a big baby, you big baby. Maybe if he won like McEnroe, he could act like McEnroe. I believe you're referring to John McEnroe and not the underground hip-hop sensation McEnroe. Do you have the audio? This was Shapo on the clay in Italy yesterday. Woo, he got angry at the chair official. He got angry at the Italian fans. Shapo was on fire yesterday. Here's what it sounded like.
Shut the f-
I'm torn on this. I like a good tantrum. I really do. Especially when it's authentic. And I don't think Shapo puts it on for a show. I think he's a snap show, and he snaps. And I do miss John McEnroe and Jimmy Connors and all the great snap shows that tennis once had, where you're just pissed off all the time. At the same time, it's him and Nick Kyrgios now. That's it, right?
Well, the thing I've seen about Shapo is
as the snap shows
from tennis fans is the fact that a lot of the times when Shapo does this, he's wrong.
He was wrong yesterday.
He's in the wrong when he does this, which
his presser, he's like, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I didn't even know the rules. I just snapped. I freaked out. You had a bunch of notes on this, Jason, in the overnight notes.
Yeah, we were going to discuss who was the greatest at temper tantrums in sports history. And I would go with McEnroe. Like, he was the original baby.
Mm-hmm. I like Jimmy Connors. Connors freaking out was good, too. They had a good freak-out rivalry back in the day.
Yeah, but I think, yeah.
You know who ruined it for everyone?
McEnroe was better at it.
You know who ruined it for everyone? Pete Sampras.
Because he was so boring?
Yeah, he was like a robot.
Yeah.
He had no emotion.
Do you know which classic freakout I enjoyed? He's not a guy known for his freakouts, but the Cujo, when he took out Mick Magoo.
That
Joseph
was great.
Is furious.
That was great.
Great all-time freakout.
Poor Mick Magoo.
One of my favorites.
Just tripping over. The baseball manager ones are always great.
Yeah.
I was watching a top 10 the other day.
Some of those are so contrived. I don't like the scripted freakout. And we always point to when Mike Yeo, when he was the head coach of the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah.
And so clearly he knew all the TV cameras were there.
Mm-hmm.
And he had this big, like he lined the guys up along the wall and had this big speech and then had this big temper tantrum, and I was kind of like, I'm not buying this, and I don't think your players are either.
Didn't Gullitson have one too? He chucked his stick into the stands over the glass.
Right. He's just like, Glenn, come on, buddy. Like, it seems it just
Dawson's Creek haircut you got going there. No one's taking you seriously.
It just seems it just seems contrived, right?
And it's
not them. Like John McEnroe, he was legitimately just a short-tempered guy who could not control himself.
But that's why I brought up Shapo, because I don't think any of it's contrived. I think he's genuinely, he's a snap show. He loses it.
But he needs to win more.
That's
because John McEnroe was like a really good tennis player.
You know what that clip reminds me of? What? With all the booing and stuff.
Why are you booing me? I'm right.
Except he was dead wrong. He was so wrong. By the way, the greatest baseball manager snap show is not Lou Piniella. It's not Earl Weaver. It's Hal McRae.
With the phone.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was so authentic because the reporter that got cut above the head with the flying phone was like, this is real.
Great
this
spin move, though, to, this to whip the phone.
Yeah, it was so good.
NHL goalies actually have
a
very...
Get out of my damn office and throws everything at the guy. It was so good.
NHL goalies have a long line of good, like, temper tantrums. I remember Billy Smith when I was growing up.
Robin
like,
Lehner?
Billy Smith and Wayne Gretzky had a feud going. Billy Smith slashed Wayne Gretzky. And then Ron Hextall was amazing.
Oh.
Like an amazing temper tantrum when he attacked Chris Chelios.
Yep. He was a snap show.
Can you imagine if that happened in the NHL today?
Well, it was retaliation for Brian Propp who got nailed.
Someone just brought this up. What about Jordan Binnington? I guess he's the closest thing we have to a modern-day goalie snap show. His problem is he faints and fakes at guys. Like, he's going to punch them. Like, at this point, I just want to see him fight somebody.
Well, Ray Emery would actually beat you down.
Razor was awesome.
Yeah.
Ray, one of my favorite goalies of all time.
He fought Josh Gratton in the minors, who was like a legit enforcer and went toe-to-toe.
Remember when he fought Andrew Peters and he laughed the entire time?
Yeah.
He's like, this is the best thing I've done.
Poor Marty Baron.
Yeah, that was not good for him. Are we still fighting in the Dunbar Lumber text message in basket?
So do you want? I asked...
unsigned texter.
I asked the unsigned texter.
Public consumption.
Dox them. I asked the unsigned texter. I was like, I just asked him an open question. Like, what's your theory on why we don't talk a lot about the CFL? And this is how he started it. I think it's possible the station itself has told staff not to cover the CFL. And then he went on and on and on and on. And I'm like, dude, if that's your starting point, then you have a conspiratorial mindset. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to really listen to your thoughts. Because we'll talk about things that people are interested in talking about. And he seems to think that, like, if we talk about the CFL, like, people are going to get super into it. Like, we have our little topics that we'll talk about. Like, someone texted in and said, to be fair, Helfer talks about Leeds a lot. Yeah, but that's just kind of funny. Like, that's his team.
We're almost getting relegated. It's tough times. Look, we've gone down the road of not paying attention to what our bosses tell us to talk about or not talk about. And then we got fired.
No, I'm kidding.
They don't tell us anything. Right.
Like, we do not have directives to talk about certain things.
Except like, Leeds.
Do you not think that we'd talk a lot more Blue Jays baseball if we were told to talk about, like, if that was something that was talked about? You know, like, hey, guys.
Sorry, guys.
You know, like, we need you guys to talk about the Blue Jays more. Like, I honestly kind of follow the Blue Jays. I kind of know what's going on right now. But we don't mention them right now because the Stanley Cup playoffs are on.
It's true. Haven't mentioned the NBA playoffs either.
And we've got the big relegation battle coming up with Leeds.
It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. We managed to destroy another promising What We Learned segment. We're now out of time. Thank you to all that wrote. And thank you even more to those that wrote in with slander.
We will eventually bring down the CFL.
It is the fuel that fires us here at the Halford and Brough Show. We're going to get out of here for today. Signing off, I have been Mike Halford. He has been Jason Brough, and he's been Laddie. This has been the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.